Welcome to Big Blend Radio with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazine.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Big Blend Radio's Books, Authors, and Writers Show. Every second Wednesday, you know, it's Writers Wednesday. We do this show with our friends over at Books Forward, an awesome, awesome organization. Check them out at booksforward.com. And of course, we're your hosts, Nancy and Lisa, you know, the crazy mother-daughter travel team traveling across the country, documenting parks and public lands while we produce digital magazines, all under the Big Blend name. And today we're excited to welcome Jeff Seitzer. His new memoir is coming out. It is coming out August 16th, 2022. Through Sparks Press, and it's called The Fun Master, A Father's Journey of Love, Loss, and Learning to Live One Day at a Time. It's very compassionate, thought-provoking, touching. You need to just go get it. So go to jeffreyseitzer.com. That's S-E-I-T-Z-E-R, jeffreyseitzer.com. And did I even pronounce your last name right, Jeff? How are you?
Great.
You never know. You think you know it, and then all of a sudden you're like, whoopsie.
Seven very difficult letters. Yeah,
but hey, it could be Smith like mine, and you know what, it's just, yeah, stick with yours. It's got some interest in it.
Yeah,
now you're based in Chicago, and but originally from Nebraska, right?
That's right. I grew up in Nebraska. Yeah, in Omaha.
In Omaha. Wow. So how do you like Chicago?
You know, I really love Chicago. You know, I lived here as a kid for a couple years. And so it seemed a little bit like home when we came back, and I grew up in a neighborhood very much like the one I live in now. I used to joke with my wife that people are like salmon. They tend to go back to where they came from. Like if you're from the suburbs, they end up in the suburbs again. And she said, well, this is a lot like where you grew up in Omaha. Oh, she's right. You know, so it felt like home for me, but I kind of like the scale of it. It's a world-class city, which is very livable. You know, we ride our bikes everywhere and there's great transportation and the lakefront. It's very exciting, but kind of like has a smaller pace than something like New York, for example, Manhattan, right? So we love it here. It's really great.
You got great architecture too.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. My wife was on an architecture tour last night, actually. Yeah. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Very cool. One of our travel writers, Debbie Stone, she comes from there and has, you know, been doing stories on the architecture, doing that tour that goes out by boat and then Botanical Gardens. But with your book, you know, Nancy and I, as soon as we started reading it, you always say, there's that saying, you want to be a fly on the wall, but I always think about being a fly in someone's brain, so you can get their thoughts. And I think your book, as soon as you start reading it, we connect with you immediately and what's going on in your mind, those thoughts, especially as a parent. And the first chapter obviously deals with something very difficult, the passing of your son. Tell us about how you, I mean, to even write the book, what led you to go, okay, I'm going to write this story?
Yeah, well, as recounted in that first chapter, you know, I was kind of drowning with him, and I survived somehow, miraculously. And my last thought was, I won't be able to tell his story, which was a peculiar thought in many ways. But one in particular is that I wasn't planning on telling his story. I did happen to have 4,000 pages of notes because my mother-in-law, I used to share laughs with her about parenting, and she suggested I keep a journal. And at first I thought I would write stories because it used to be newspapers, you could publish little personal essays. It used to be more common, but he didn't like to be the center of attention. So I put that idea aside, but I kept keeping the notebook partly because, mainly to remember things and have detailed memories of them, but also because it gave me something to do. Like at the playground, I tended to be the only guy in the playground and surrounded by women.
Right.
So I would have
something to do. That's got to be difficult.
Like being a nude beach. What do you do with your eyes? I mean, no one's making eye contact. So it's like I needed something to do, so I could keep these notes. And so then he died. And, it just seemed like the right thing to do. I kind of like, and particularly because he was a kind of a special sort of kid. I'd gotten to know all these kids with special challenges. Like he had severe hearing loss and had trouble breathing sometimes and swallowing. And I spent a lot of time at the hospital with various kids with different conditions. And I was so impressed with their zest for life. I mean, they were so determined to get everything out of life, and they didn't feel at all self-conscious. They didn't feel limited or bitter. And I was so impressed by that. I thought I should try and convey that to people.
I tell you, definitely do.
It's valuable. I think it's going to help a lot of people who are going to have to go through the same process. Mm-hmm. You know, I know my dad was as far as I can remember my whole childhood. He was terminally ill. Mm-hmm. We spent hours and hours and hours in and out of the hospital. And it's a whole different way of living. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't really, you kind of, at least for me, I always felt like you're not in charge of anything. Mm-hmm. You know, you just sit and wait and mm-hmm. try to keep yourself occupied and watch people running around, you going crazy over this and that. You don't really know what the emergencies are. It's just I just think back, I can even smell the hospital when I think about it.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, my wife has this great phrase, the vision thing, right? And so you have this mm-hmm. image of what your life should be like. And oftentimes it doesn't quite work that way. Like your dad was terminally ill. That's not mm-hmm. how you want to experience your childhood. And, you know, mm-hmm. when your baby's born and surprise has all these internal organ defects and life-threatening conditions, that also you didn't think your life would be that way. And it takes a moment to adjust, right? Mm-hmm. And if you kind of have the right outlook, you can still kind of, you know, you can live very fully. It's not like, mm-hmm. you know, your life is ruined, but you do have to adjust. And mm-hmm. that's what I learned from these kids, you know, because I had a lot of struggles as a kid. I had encephalitis as a small kid.
And wow.
That left me devastated, like really bad neurological problems. And then I got a degenerative condition. That's a long story too. But nonetheless, you know, I still had to live. And I kind of didn't live as fully as I perhaps could have because I kind of was caught up in thinking that things should be different. And these kids didn't think that way. And that was really a learning experience for me.
Wow. Like
he never spent any time thinking, oh my God, why did I get hearing loss? You know, so focused on enjoying each moment. And that's something that, you know, I think everybody could benefit from because we all, you know, you don't have to be saddled with some terrible disability to feel this way to a degree, right? You look around the world and think, why does it go so well for that person and not for me? Mm-hmm. But they're overwhelmed too. There's something they're struggling with that you don't know about, right? And so everyone's a little bit overwhelmed and their life isn't quite the way they like it to be. So really, you know, seeing these kids and how they grapple with their problems can help you pull yourself out of that, I think. I mean, that was kind of, because it helped me.
I really agree. Agree. Mm-hmm. You know, we lived in Kenya and South Africa for many years, and you go out to the townships, and yes, very people are living in squalor, according to us Westernized people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You go out there, and
they're happy.
Definitely poverty, but kids are playing with whatever they have to play with, smiling, laughing. They may not be able to have food that night. And maybe have to wait till the next day, but they're still laughing even while their bellies are grumbling, you know? So we kind of always had that around us, and there's a real resilience and let's play. And we forget, I think our world is so fast paced. And I think COVID kind of also shook us a little bit, but I kind of see it all going right back to where it was, you know, that we want to have a good time. You know, and we forget because we just go in this big fast paced thing. And I love that you wrote these notes and wrote things down because I think we move so fast that we do forget all those little treasure moments. Mm-hmm. You know, those little, I mean, like yesterday, Nancy and I just took off and sat and played with dogs in a pond and played with leeches
so
and frogs. And we were just like suddenly became kids. And, you know, because we pet sit as we travel. And I texted the pet parents. We were very cool people. And he goes, steal the day, like it's yours, you know, steal it, steal that moment. I said, we're having a hard time going to work here. This is too cool out here. He's like, do it. And we did. And I think those are those moments where we have to, as no matter what age we are, when you can find those little nuggets of joy, go for it, you know?
Well, there's so, short. I just say there's so much of what we do that we think we have to do. And you really don't. You know, we make things, small things, into big, important things, and they're not. You know, when something else comes along in life to shake you up, then you start to reevaluate and you see you wasted so much time doing these so important things that really on the scale of life are important.
Well, things that take you outside of the ordinary, right, that derail your life to a degree, oftentimes open up other opportunities, really, right? Mm-hmm. Like his illness kept us from a lot of ordinary kid life. So we had to kind of explore and find other things, you know, like he discovered the neighborhood. We got to know all the people in the shops, you know, and the librarians and the guys in the auto department, the auto shops would, you know, invite us in and they'd show them how all the stuff works, you know, and because he had to, you know, sometimes he had a little bit of a residual cough after he had a cold and you couldn't go anywhere where kids were, right? So
yeah.
We could find this other world. And it was great. You know, it was very stimulating. You know, he wasn't like in enrichment programs or camps, you know, because of it. Mm-hmm. But then we discovered all this other stuff and you can really embrace that. You
that's know. Cool.
That's cool.
Nice. And, that's nice.
Yeah, because you're dealt the hand that you're dealt. Mm-hmm. It's what you do with those cards, mm-hmm. you know?
Yep.
Yeah, you could either fold or let's go for it, you know? And kids do teach us that. You know, kids and dogs have that, and it's, I'm not saying, you know, but it's true. Like yesterday, we were talking about that, and we knew you were coming on the show, and we were like, let's play with leeches. This is cool, and frogs. Like, kids do that. Kids remind you to enjoy these little beauties of the world, and to not just, like, you don't have to go to Disneyland to have a good time. Sorry, well, Disneyland.
And now kids are in enrichment programs so early, in sports very early. They're in very structured activities. And they lose this to a degree. There's something to just like experiencing things freely, right? And discovering things on your own, which is really great. It's I find, you know, because their minds crackle, right? They see a frog jumping along. I mean, it's not quite as, you know, they aren't like being told by a coach to do this particular thing in this particular way. And so their mind is working freely, right? And discovering on its own. And I think that's a special human thing, right? I think.
Right.
They're very observant, as opposed to being told, do this, do that. When you're out on your own, if you can get yourself out of adult mode, then you start to see things. Like, sometimes I think it's really cool if you just get on your hands and knees and walk through the forest on your hands and knees. Because then you can see
things. My mother is so normal.
I know. Well, because then you can see things under leaves on the forest floor that you would normally just walk over.
Right, yeah.
So I think it's a valuable thing to walk through the forest on your hands and knees.
We've done
kind of,
Risk getting dirty, you know? Kids, they like exploring the dirt. I remember some moms used to tisk because I let them jump in leaves or they'd be digging in the backyard and like, what are you going to do? Those clothes are going to get so dirty. It's like, well, we can wash them.
That's exactly it. You have washing machines for that.
It's only clothes.
Well, that's the thing about getting kids. You know, I had a friend, she had her first child and my other friend had his first child and he was off to visit her and she was taking the kid out. It's like the kid wanted to crawl in the dirt outside. Mm-hmm. She picked him up and put the child to crawl on the carpet because she thought it was safer. It's and he's like, well, he's like a, let's hike and let's do all this stuff. He's like, put your kid in the dirt, get it off the carpet. It's the worst thing for it, you know?
Yeah.
So there's true. That over, we also become overprotective. And that's kind of what I wanted to go with, even just the very beginning. You know, when you say you're in someone's, you know, the fly in someone's mind, you talk about that back and forth. Do you let him go for it? Do you pull him back in? You know, because I think that's got to be one of the hardest things for a parent. And that's what the Fun Master is such a brilliant title for so many different way. I mean, you can take so many different, as you read the book, it's a perfect title. It is absolutely perfect because you could take it in so many different ways. But part of it to me is like that balance of parenting is, you want your kids to be free and dance like there's no one watching, but you can't always do it because they may be dancing into the street and, you know, there's cars. Yeah. So there's that balance.
Yeah, it was difficult. I mean, the book is kind of a tragedy, like in an ancient Greek sense in a way, because we're all about connection, you know, and we kind of conveyed this to our kids and people would come by like we weren't busy cleaning, you know, and organizing and we let bills go unpaid because people would come by and we would like talk to them and, you know, spend our time with them. And, you know, these people show up at the beach and unexpectedly, and we weren't planning on going swimming, and it's hard for us to say no, you know. And one thing led to another. We didn't have a chance to talk about safety precautions. You know, usually we were very careful about these things, but there they are. And it's kind of like hard. So that's our fatal flaw. You know, the connection, our desire for connection is a good thing. It's a positive thing, but it's also our fatal flaw, right?
Because we're herd animals.
Yeah.
You know, we're not loners. I mean, there are some that are loners, and that they're the few. Really, we are herd animals. We're meant to be social. We're meant to get together, you know, and I think that's our learning process, because you learn from each other.
Well, and the irony too, part of the story of the book is how I became a less rigid person, right? Like I controlled every aspect of my life because of these neurological problems I had. And I learned to live more freely and be more flexible. But then of course, here we are the last day, his last day. And it's like, we were going to go play miniature golf. Like the formerly rigid Jeff would have said, no, we're going to stick to miniature golf, right? But I was like, he really wanted to go and wanted to, you know, and so I went swimming with him and he didn't come back, you know. It's one of those things. And of course, partly it's like one of the things that's not discussed in the book is someone kind of studied the beach conditions, and he said, you know, when you came into that little spot with him, he was doomed, right? It was just a kind of an area of extreme turbulence. Nonetheless, we put him in that circumstance, you know, and you see how, you know, conditioned, how it developed, right, very quickly that day. That was the point of the chapter, to show you how precarious life is, like from one moment.
Right, exactly.
He's gone.
I mean, you know, in a second. Yeah. No, it's not planned. You know what I mean? Yeah. And how do you move forward? I mean, that is something also very important about your book, is the moving forward aspect is very, very difficult. I know even Nancy, when she lost her brother, she lost your brother and your best friend within 6 months.
Yeah.
And one was expected from cancer and the other was a shooting that happened.
Oh, yeah.
And so Nancy was kind of just out not in the, she was out of it for a while. And
yeah,
you can't force people out of grief. You know, especially, you know, just we couldn't. And I remember planning a big surprise party for her, for her birthday. And boy, did I get in trouble for that. And then, but at the same time, I saw her, you know, she couldn't be rude to all her friends there.
Yeah.
And so next, you know, I saw her smiling and laughing and having a good time. And there was a band playing music. I mean, so I had to do what we call a pattern interrupt. Yes. Our friend Bobby DePorter is an educator, always says that there's a pattern interrupt. And we've learned that that's important. And it seems like that has to happen too, to move forward.
Yeah. Well, we threw ourselves into grief, first of all, like, and we were surrounded by people who really helped a lot, you know, and kind of grieved with us. And that helped a lot. And then, you know, of course our daughter kind of helped pull us out a little bit. We just had to go and function, you know, like shortly before he died, when he was younger, I hosted a big party for all the preschool classes. As a stay-at-home dad, it was a way for me to meet parents and them to see our home. Kind of an outreach program. But we did it for her too, you know, because we kind of owed that to her. It was a really tough thing to do. But then writing the book really helped me a lot, because it was kind of like channeling. Like I was re-experiencing all of this while I was writing it. And eventually I had to face the ending. You know, originally I wrote the final chapter was a Greek tragedy. It was a little bit of avoidance behavior, you know, but finally facing it was so hard writing about his death. It took me a long time to do it. I would just collapse, you know,
imagine
words and actually writing it. And now I can, having done that, I can kind of read it and, you know, I can kind of like move forward, you know. It's kind of, the writing the book helped me, you know.
Yeah, I think it's a process that everybody's going to handle death of loved ones in their own way.
Yeah.
And I look at it now as a learning. You learn so much more than about the people who have passed, because you think about them on a different level. Like little things you notice, but let it slip by. Then when you revisit those memories, you're like, oh man, like with my brother, he was a gymnast. And now when I think back, I see different body language that he's just like, if we were somewhere, all of a sudden he'd be flipping and doing double flips and you know, it just out of the blue, there he would go. And you're like, it's like a monkey, you know, it's like, what are you doing? And then when I think back now, I can remember now there was a look in his eye and I'm like, oh, he's going to do it. And there you go. And there are things that you notice about people, but somehow when they're still with you, that's on the back shelf. When they're still, I believe they're still with you when they pass, but you're just in a different phase. And you remember things, more personal things, closer.
Well, I think, I think what you said is very important, Nancy, that, you know, we're here to learn. And mm-hmm. I think that these deaths of people, when they're younger, right, they mm-hmm. tend to be the people we need most, right? They were so mm-hmm. important in so many people's lives. And it's kind of a, you know, this sounds terrible, but I think like, we need to learn something, you know, their passing is teaching us something, right? Mm-hmm. They had a lesson for us. And, you know, we need to kind of discern what that lesson is. Like if they were still here, that would be great, but we might not be learning as much because we relied so much on them for certain mm-hmm. things, right? Mm-hmm. And we do that ourselves, you know, without them. And so I'm not sure.
That's a reality.
Yeah. And I think there's things we know, but we don't we're not ready to face mm-hmm. and eventually you have to face. And I think when somebody close to you passes, that's part of now you're gonna face parts of yourself uh-huh. that, you know, you just like, how strong are you, how do you handle this? There's these abilities that just kind of lie there mm-hmm. that you don't use mm-hmm. until something pushes you into it.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's, yeah. I don't know if I'm saying it right, but
I understand exactly. You know, you need to kind of, you can't rely on these people to provide that for you. So you kind of need to find it yourself. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of helps you grow. And mm-hmm. you know, if you were asked to choose, you'd probably say, I'd rather not grow. I'd rather have them. Right.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. The fact is they aren't there. So it forces you to grow. And that's good too. I mean, you know, why else are we here? We're here to mm-hmm. develop. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Do you see, I mean, on that level of it, of learning and discussion, because grief can be also very solitary. And mm-hmm. I mean, if you're a single parent, that would have been really hard. Like, yeah. I think that would be just, I mean, it's devastating already, but I mean, like, it would, I think for a single parent, if they lost a young child, it'd be crushing. And through your book and through discussion, I know that there's, you know, therapy groups and things like that, which are important too, but do you see doing like a book club kind of thing where people can talk with you and, I don't know, have that kind of connection from your book?
Yeah, I would love to do that. Really. We participated in grief groups, you know, for quite a few years mm-hmm. and people have different styles of grieving and, you know, some people are separated by it. Like my wife and I fortunately have the same style. You know, we don't deny the loss and we share it and, you know, we are still saddened by it. So I would really welcome that because I think that it helps people a lot and it helps me to be able to talk with people. Like, you know, if you've experienced something like this, you're kind of in a special fraternity, right? Like you've been affected by life in a certain way that other people don't understand. I remember when he first died, we were at a nice mass and we were outside and I looked over and a couple of people were laughing and they noticed I was looking at them and they became embarrassed, but they shouldn't have been embarrassed because they live in a different world than I do, right? Like I don't expect them to feel the same way I do, right? I've been pulled out of that life that they had right there, right? I wasn't able to participate in them right then. So people who have had these losses understand each other in a deep way. And so talking with them is a really great thing. And people helped us a lot. And I would love to help other people by talking about their losses.
I think it would be a good movie too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like a documentary kind of. Mm-hmm. I see it going in that direction. Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's a great idea.
Yeah. Get on it.
Well, and I think it's really, really helpful because when you lose somebody that's really close, mm-hmm. you kind of flounder and direction that is meant well helps a lot. You know, it really does help you get through things. And then, you know, it's as you get, I'm going to say this wrong, not if you get used to the loss or you learn to live with it. Let me put it that way. Yeah, learn to live, with the loss. Then you start to appreciate the things you put in the back of your mind about the person. And then I don't know, I just somehow, even though things aren't your fault, feel there's a guilt. Mm-hmm. Like you always feel like you should have done something and you can't. Yeah. And you know, that finally does, you get it into perspective where you realize there's nothing you could have done. It wasn't your fault, that kind of thing, you know?
Well, it doesn't mean that you don't love them still.
And it doesn't mean
that the loss isn't there. But the fact is, when it first happens, you're going around without skin, right?
Yeah, right.
And over time, you develop skin. I mean, and you shouldn't apologize for that, you know? Like even recently, I'm always a little bit distracted, you know? It's kind of like I'm not fully myself. And I don't apologize for that. When people lose someone, like a friend whose son died suddenly, and I came right up to her and I said, you know, you're disabled now, right? Mm. And you just have to learn to accept that. You learn to live with the disability, but you are kind of disabled. You won't ever be the same. And she found that helpful because you feel bad about not being herself, right?
But this is huge because people can shut themselves off. And that's what I was saying, like a single parent, it's so easy to play the blame game and then to shut off because you don't know how to be around people. How are you expected? You know, it's the same thing. And you know, also about cancer too, in your family. And, you know, you'll have a friend who suddenly has cancer and you, what do you say? What do you do? Yeah. People who've been around it kind of get it. And I think it's so important that people need to know that they're not alone. It's not just you. It's not one of those things, well, you'll never understand. It's never, you know, because that just puts you into the victim mode, you know, and that's not, you got to get out of that.
Well, I admire my wife so much because she'd started a new job right before he died, right?
Wow.
So here she is, all these new colleagues. And she said, she was coming back to work after having a leave and said, I know I'm coming back and you're going to be uncomfortable around me. Here's what you should do, right?
Oh, wow.
It was helpful to people because they just didn't know what to do, right?
Yeah.
They're just frozen. They aren't bad people, but you know, you just are terrified of saying the wrong thing. And of course, some people are terrified and they do say the wrong thing.
Yes.
Good if they knew
what to say. This is true. That's
exactly. Exactly. That's, See, I just make a joke out of everything and that's terrible.
Some people really do say the stupidest things to you that you're like, I think they're so nervous about what to say that they say. They meant to say this, but they said that.
Right. Yeah. No, we have to sympathize with them, you know?
Yeah. 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 And then they're forever mortified. They can't even look at you, you know?
Yeah. Right. And so you want to reassure them, but you know, the fact is you're not going to tell them that you're okay. Right. Like it takes a long time to say you're okay. People would be nervous. You know? So you're okay now. Well, no, I mean, we're functioning. But you're not okay, really. You
and laughter is good.
Yeah,
My brother and I were at a funeral with my aunt, and my uncle had passed away, and I still laugh at it. Her hat flew off and went into the grave. I'm all standing around the grave. just as the hat flew onto the coffin. I threw a shovel of dirt on it, and my brother and I lost it because we thought that was the funniest thing. And then
like, who's gonna get it?
Yeah, we looked at her and we realized, and everybody's staring at us. Yeah, right. We realized this is funny. And then she started to laugh, and then everybody started laughing. So it was a good thing.
Right.
But at first we thought, oh my gosh, what have we done? Yeah, because we're. But I still think it's funny.
Person. Yeah. No. Right.
It was funny.
Yeah,
you
I mean.
Have to have laughter.
People have gotten better about grief. I think there's more honesty about it, which is good. I mean, I think when people live a more honest life and you know, embrace their feelings, that has some value because it helps other people. They're suffering in silence, you know, they don't know.
Yeah.
And so I'd be glad to talk to people. I think that would be great.
I think doing a book club with your book is
that would be awesome.
I think awesome, you know, really. And it's something that, you know, also you coming from the father perspective, but also the stay-at-home dad, that's a whole other deal. I mean, remember Mr. Mom?
Yeah.
The movie, Mr. You've got to have watched that. I was like, he had to have watched Mr. Mom, but you're seeing more and more dads, stay-at-home dads. In fact, we know a musician in Sweden, and he became, because when you know, a family has a new baby, both parents get to stay home and take leave, you know, which is really nice, but he stayed at home with the kids. And he's like, well, this is cool. I can do my music. I can play with my kids, you know, but he really loved it and learned all these things about himself and patience and all kinds. And, you know, he loves it. He loves being the stay-at-home dad.
I think formerly men didn't quite realize how difficult it is taking care of a kid, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Now more men do it. And, you know, they have a better sense of it. It's a changed world, really. I did it in 2000 to 2010, and there were like no guys around. And then after the Great Recession in 2009, suddenly there were a lot, right? Because they did a lot of work. But now it's more common because people work from home more. You know, they can balance it with their jobs, which is generally great. I mean, I think it's good to have contact with people. My wife likes going to the office a couple days a week, 3 days a week, because it's enriching to be with your colleagues, you know, but it's also nice to be home where, you know, you can go pick them up at 5 o'clock. And so that's, I think it's a positive development, really, you know.
And that's awesome.
Well, the understanding between, you know, mom and dad is better.
Yeah.
Because now you can relate to what, especially like a working mom, that's really hard.
Yeah, no, it is.
That's really, really hard. So,
and
you know,
that's work too, right?
Yeah.
And oftentimes, it was a great experience for me. It really helped me grow and develop other parts of myself, as you pointed out, Nancy. It became kind of, I became a different person because of it, you know, and I became a lot better, right? I realized I can do hard things, right? I don't have to control my day, because as a parent, you know, parent, you have no control over your day.
Exactly.
Control over anything.
You're a carpooler.
You do forget to do things, because there's always something urgent that just crops up. There's something urgent. You're supposed to do this, like pay a bill or something, and whatever. And you have to do that. And then you're exhausted.
Oh, so there's a bake sale.
Yeah.
The bake sale, or you have to do the math project and you go, I can't remember math. What are you doing to me? What
algebra.
During COVID, I felt so bad. And I think they said the stats went up of parents drinking more wine because of their kids, homeschooling kids. Suddenly the wine sales went up, because it's like, what do you mean I have to help with trigonometry? What are you talking about? I don't even know how to spell it anymore. You know, so it's kind of this change over what you did. It's that's cool though. I think it's cool, you know, getting to learn and I don't know, kids make you young again.
Mm-hmm. They do, right, yeah.
Well, you sometimes know? They make you old.
Don't look at me, Nancy.
I am looking at you.
It can be very tiring. It is very tiring, you know, and it can be kind of monotonous, you know, and like I played store once. This is before we had kids. My wife and I were laughing about this. Like I was playing with nieces and nephews, and it was a beautiful day at this summer cottage. And like, I'm in the basement with our nieces playing store for 4 hours. They sold me the same stuff over and over. Oh, Jeff, I'm going to sell you this, right? Like, you know, you can try and pretend you're excited, but it kind of wears you out, you know. It can be.
Lisa used to play waitress. Exciting.
It's beautiful, but it's also kind of like it's hard, you know. It takes a little bit out of you.
Well, Lisa used to play waitress, and I got her a little order form book, and I'm like, oh God, why did you do that? And she'd just stand there and like, okay, what will you have? And she'd write it down, and then 10 minutes later, rip it up. Okay, what will you have? I'm like, oh, geez.
Yeah. Well, it's very endearing, though. It's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah, you built me, she built me a little, this is in Kenya. She built me a restaurant. Like out of, you know, like this old wood and everything, they painted characters on it. The termites ate it. And so one day you walk out, they're gone. I mean, you're in Africa with really big flying ants and termites.
Yeah.
They ate it. They that was it. And I'm like, mommy, my restaurant is gone. So it was like a life lesson right there. I was like, well, there it is.
That's, oh, your restaurant is like, closed.
And Nancy's like, that's business. That's how business works.
Mom is saved, but
I know. And she's like, oh, I don't have to do that anymore. Thank God.
Yeah, I didn't do it. I promise.
Your writing is so good. And again, obviously this is there's therapy in it. There's, it's touching, very, very touching book, but you're very reality-based too. And I think that's a really amazing quality that you have. But as a writer, for us to connect immediately, it's amazing because I was reading that you've written all these things I don't even know how to pronounce, or, you're a smart person. You're one of the smart people. Yes. That wrote a touching book, but I mean, you've got the smarty smarts, So how did you go from the smarty smarts to that? I mean, that's two different writing styles.
Yeah, the thing is, as an academic, I was a little bit of an outsider.
That's a smarty smart.
Well, it's a good thing in some ways. One of my professors said to me, you're a generalist, but in academia, we're specialists. And it was a critical comment, but he was right. I was a generalist. I would jump from thing to thing as my mind would find things interesting. And I think that helped me write this book, right? Because I'd had such a broad experience. I wasn't a very narrow specialist. And the people I studied with and the people that I read, the books that I worked, the people I worked on, thinkers, they were all great writers, right? And so that helped me a lot. Like I translated a couple books by this guy named Carl Schmidt, and he was a fabulous writer. He was a lawyer. He was a legal theorist, but he was a fabulous writer. And so I was kind of inspired by that. I thought that you could still be, an entertaining writer when you're talking about a serious subject. Nonetheless, it took me, I had to retool because this is kind of writing this memoir. I wrote it as kind of a novel, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe that's why it kind of
it's so has readable.
This connection. Yeah, it's so... Right. Yet reality. That's a good, sorry, the dogs got excited.
And the reason why I did it that way is like, I didn't want to kind of, I was worried about painting a too rosy picture of myself, right? I didn't want to write a hero memoir, dad memoir, right? Where I'm talking, providing wisdom to people. I wanted to show myself warts and all. And so I thought this kind of form was the best way to do that because a lot of novels, like people would say this to me, copy editors would say, well, you really ought to speak from your contemporary experience looking back and what you've learned. And I didn't want to do that because I thought I might do a little bit of spin control, right? I might, go back and try and justify the way I was before because I wasn't completely proud of what I was originally. I was kind of self-involved and impatient and, anger prone. And so I wanted to really get the reader back into how I experienced things so they could really see how I changed. Right. And I thought this was the best way to do it. Novel where they what I experience,
Yeah, it is. It is like, when I say about the fly in the mind, then it's also the soul,
Yeah, right.
Because you're balancing that reality. And I think that's a really, that's a good talent to have,
Well,
so
it's such a personal story that, I think you did a marvelous job. Because I think it's really hard to write what you wrote. I really do. Appreciate what you've written.
Well, one advantage in terms of academia that helped me too is that the type of philosophy I studied was really about how humans experience the world and how they change, right? Like the German term Geist, spirit, is more like not your soul in a religious sense, but like what you are as a person and how you develop and change. And so that kind of helped me a lot. Like I kind of, when I became a stay-at-home dad, I kind of was thinking in those terms, seeing other people and trying to understand how they became the way they were. Because oftentimes they were kind of difficult, they can be kind of hard to work with, in some ways. But you could understand like the world they lived in, right? And like why they behaved that way, and then learn how to like work with them better. So that was kind of stimulating for me as it's, like it got my mind working, in a new way, right? And actually dealing with people. So
I think you should write more. I really want more. You should write more.
I am writing a book about all sorts of people, like philosophers and theologians and physicists and neuroscientists are coming together and seeing they all are agreeing about happiness, right? And all the different things that make us happy. So I want to write a book about the spiritual life, drawing from all of these not a spiritual life in a narrow religious sense, but like how you approach your life. So you can be more fully, right, and more enriched life. So it's kind of like a continuation of this book, but more philosophical.
Cool. That's a perfect balance. Yeah, I love it. Yeah. So if you could spend a day just to pick the brain of one person in history for that book, who would it be?
Yeah.
I mean, even even to see how they like to have fun, going back to being the fun master, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, I really liked, I would think it would be like this French philosopher Rousseau. Because like everyone in his time thought, well, human beings are selfish and self-centered, right? And they develop these things like the state of nature where everyone is kind of like, you know, they're pitted against each other. And he said, well, you know, maybe human beings weren't originally selfish. Like they became selfish over time, you know, like when people started to worry about property, like you said, like in Kenya, they didn't have anything and they could still be happy, right?
Right.
They didn't have anything. So he kind of reimagined history, right? To show how human beings aren't by nature selfish. They're actually compassionate and loving, but like they were made to be selfish over time. So maybe we can change them again. And so I'd like to talk to him because I like that imaginative approach to human beings because it was kind of, it was hopeful, right? Like
that's what I was going to say. And that's something that right now I think the world needs.
Yeah.
There's so much arrogance and ego and greed and anger, and we start to think, what is wrong with people, right?
Well, and closing yourself off, like
exactly.
Fences between neighbors.
Yeah, like, I mean, look at it, the way politics now, you know, the compassion is, when you think of the world, you start to think there's nothing good out there, but that's not true. I can tell you from us traveling, we're meeting people of all kinds every single day that we're somewhere new and seeing that compassion. I mean, I was at the grocery store the other day here in Connecticut, where we are right now recording this. And I was putting my groceries in the paper bag. And of course, I'm really not good at that. And I had my mask on and I was like, I'm going to sneeze. And I'm trying to pack this bag and it just toppled over. And two people, one on either side of me, came running and helped me put my things back in the bag. And I thought, wow, Connecticut is friendly. They wouldn't do that in certain places, but it reminded me that we really do still have compassion in this world. Right. So I think that's, I was in shock, literally, like that happened.
And you have to kind of take that chance yourself, right? If everybody would take that chance, then we would start to grow together more. Like I found myself bracing myself in traffic and it's like, well, I'm making it worse, right? Like tense.
Yeah.
And it's a hard thing to get away from because if you have a bad experience with someone, you immediately turn and like, you know, you're angry and that kind of passes it on. It's hard to break that chain, right?
That reactionary chain.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. You got to turn the music up when that traffic jam happens and start dancing and put on a show. That's what you have to do.
Get out of the car and dance around.
I know. That's it.
Yeah. It's a Chinese fire drill.
That's it. Yeah, we used to do that. That's fun. But Jeff, it has been such a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you for joining us. Everyone, again, The Fun Master comes out August 16th, 2022. But you can go to Jeff's website. It's Jeffrey, and that's J-E-F-F-R-E-Y, because you never know. It could be G-E-O, but it's not. So jeffreysitzer.com, and that's S-E-I-T-Z-E-R. See, I can spell, so I'm doing good today. Of course, we want to thank Books Forward as well. And of course, keep up with us at bigblendradio.com. We do our writers, books, and authors show every second Wednesday. Thanks so much, Jeff.
Well, thank you. Jeff.
Thank you, everyone. Have a great day.
And the dogs say goodbye too.
Yeah, they do.
That's great.
Oh boy.
Man.